Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Post-Political Podcast. I'm the host, Derek Britton, and I'm super excited for tonight. I wanted to start off by letting folks know that I will be taking a summer break. So I just kind of made it official with the scheduling and stuff. So I think mid-May, like May 11th or 12th or something like that, will be the last episode of the season. And then I'm going to take the summer off, so June and July. And then I'll be right back in right at the end of July, early August. That Thursday there will be the first show of season two. So, tune in for the rest of this first season. And then we're going to come back a little stronger and with all sorts of different folks. And it'll be kind of the same show with a little bit of a new twist and look. And we'll see how it goes. First up, let's do the promos. So we have the Vermin Supreme Institute. Our purpose is to inspire social evolution through the disruption of authoritarianism, to promote compassion and activism, and to spread the knowledge of redacted history. Through the use of humor, direct action, and mutual aid, we uplift the disaffected, the disenfranchised, and the disempowered. And happy to announce the Love and Action fundraiser went extremely well. Thank you for folks who donated time and money and anything else they could to the cause. That was all basically delivered to folks in Reno, Nevada, 75 survival gear packages, I guess, to the unhomed individuals there. And then some of them were left over and handed out to the soup kitchen after. So thank you, everyone who donated time, effort, anything to that campaign. Next up, we have the Brewed Coffee. If you are in Lexington, Kentucky, check out Brewed Coffee and Beer Drinkery. You can also check out my affiliate link that I'll throw into the comments after the show. You can buy all sorts of stuff and support the podcast. And then next up, we have the two post-political merchandise. First up, we are supporting the Trans Resource Network of Louisiana. We have the Be Gay, Do Crime promo. So if you buy a hat or a shirt, one of these specific pieces of merchandise, 100% of the proceeds will go to the Trans Resource Network of Louisiana. And if you aren't looking for the merchandise but still want to help out the organization, you can go right to that PayPal, either scan that QR code or go right to the PayPal link at the top and directly, donate to the organization. And then lastly, we have the Bridge Kids Give Back mutual aid organization as well. They're committed to feeding, clothing, uplifting the unhoused community in Massachusetts, and they're looking to grow as well. So if you buy either of these, 100% of the proceeds go to them, or you can, again, go direct to the PayPal link at the bottom. So that's it for the promos. Next up, we have Caitlin Cloven. So one of my great friends, she's a marketing and communications genius that she's working on currently the Stacey Pressman campaign, Spike Cohen, Vermin Supreme. She just had a major win with our last guest, Sasha Cohen, and just one of my best friends. So everyone, welcome in Caitlin. How's it going?
It's good. How are you?
Doing great.
I'm just happy to be here.
Yeah, no, this is awesome. It's funny, we talked about this before it even started, and you helped, I guess, bring me kind of back into libertarian activism with Spike Cohen stuff, and then later Vermin Supreme stuff. Like, it's funny that it's taken this long to have you on the show, but I'm super excited that we finally get to chat and with a live audience. So this will be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like come full circle. Like now, like you're having me on your show. Yeah, no, it's super. Like I'm so glad that I found you and you came to me whenever Joe Jorgensen moved me over to Spike Cohen's team.
Yeah.
Day ever. So yeah, no, it's a thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been keeping an eye on your show. Like you've been doing fantastic work. I'm so proud to be part of this. So
thank you. Yeah. No, and we have Hody Johns, actually, the post from him kind of kicked off the whole thing, and that's when I messaged you and jumped on Spike's team, and the rest is kind of history, so that's awesome.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of just start off how I start off most of the shows and ask you, how did you, and I don't even know if I think we've talked about this a couple of times, but I don't know if I know the start to finish, how you ended up in the Libertarian Party, but in third parties in general.
Oh, man. So I guess it kind of starts in high school. I didn't know about third parties. I didn't know they were a thing. I grew up in middle of nowhere, Missouri. Never mentioned in school anything. We took a government test. It was basically a political compass. My teacher was just like, well, you're not conservative and you're not liberal. this doesn't make any sense. And I was like, okay, cool. I just won't vote. Whatever. And then I was 19 or 20, and I heard Ron Paul. Still didn't get involved. I was just like, that kind of makes sense. And he was talking about like privatizing things. And I kind of took it one step further. I was like, why don't we privatize like the police? And like, now I know that's a bad idea. But back then, like at 20, just to have that thought, I was like, kind of foretelling of how far I would go. But, and then I didn't really think about politics too much. I had a couple kids and I was a stay at home mom, and I kind of like just got out of politics altogether. And then I was kind of looking for something like to have some purpose, like have something other than, you know, just being a mom. So I started, like just by chance, I ended up watching Shailene Woodley when she was live on Facebook, and she was at Standing Rock. And I was like, what the hell is this? What's going on here? And I was living in Minnesota at the time, and it was only like a couple hours away, or maybe three or four. And then I watched her like at the protest and like being with these people, and it was like this really awesome environment. And they were explaining the things. She was with one of the tribal leaders, and he was explaining the whole case. And I was like, this is fucked. So I watched that, and then I, at the end of her stream, she got arrested. And I was like, she shouldn't be getting arrested. She didn't do anything. I was watching the whole time. So I got like really fired up. So, and then I started following it like every day, all day. I was on the live streams. I was in all of their groups every, and I was about to go out there. And then they started using fire hoses on protesters in the middle of the night in negative 20 degree weather. And I was like, no, not going there. I feel like I'm still a little too new to the scene to do that. But yeah, I went from a, I considered myself a Democrat, but like not really, because I love guns and I don't like taxes. I just didn't really know there was a home for me. So then I was following this whole thing. And then in one of the groups, there was a live stream shared, or a article or a something shared, a video of Gary Johnson. And he was talking about Dakota Access Pipeline. And I was like, that's my guy. Because nobody else is talking about this. Like the other two candidates, like they've basically just like shrugged it off or not said anything. Like, and I didn't like Hillary or Trump anyways. Like I wasn't going to vote. And then I found Gary Johnson. I was like, okay, I'm sold. Like, sign me up. And I went to one of his rallies. Didn't get to meet him. Still a little shy at the time. Now I totally would have ran right up to him and be like, suck. But takes a little time to get that, you know, whatever. So I went to his rally. I was like super impressed. I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is what I want to do. I want to get into politics. And I joined a Facebook group for libertarians. And that was a very bad decision. Because libertarians are just so, so nice on Facebook to new people who don't know anything. Because I was a one issue person. Like I knew things about others, but I wasn't very informed on other stuff because I had two kids. Like my daughter was 8 months old at the time. Like, but I got in the groups and I started learning, and I learned quick. And I ended up getting in Gary Johnson's dank meme stash, and a prominent libertarian who was not prominent at the time found me in there arguing with somebody, and he's like, I like your style, because he had called him several names. And I was like, that's just what I do. I learned quick in libertarian Facebook groups. But yeah, so he pulled me out of there into another group, and we ended up starting a Facebook page, Dankertarians. And it was really, really cool meme page. And it was just kind of talking about, like, you know, it's basic libertarianism. But I found a really, really good group of friends. We ended up splitting off and going into Think Liberty. That's kind of when I figured out, like, I've always kind of had these skills for like pattern recognition and like analytics and being able to take a set of data and like extrapolate like conclusions from that. And I never really knew how to use it. I was like, I don't use this these skills wiping butts. I don't use these skills taking my kids for a walk. What am I going to do with my life? Figured out like Facebook pages. I was like, I think I'm good at this. I ended up growing a page from like a brand new page to 80,000 within a year. And I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. And then I just started expanding my skills, and we grew that. I was editor in chief for that. And then kind of got disillusioned after 2018. There was just, the party was just, it was constant infighting, and you get burnt out working on so many campaigns, because I volunteered for everything. I was on the XCOM of my state party. I was trying to set up like 13 county affiliates at the same time. It was chaotic. But I just kind of got burnt out and I backed out. And then a friend of mine who was in kind of the meme groups with me, he's like, hey, my dad is really good friends with Steve Dosbach. I was like, okay, I don't know what that means. But he's like, well, he's Joe Jorgensen's campaign manager. And again, I was like, yeah, okay, I don't know what that means. So, but he's like, I have a job for you. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll take money. Yeah. But then I got in and I was Joe Jorgensen's social media director from like mid-December of 2019 until, we went through the nomination. She got the nomination. A lot of people were super surprised about that. It was fun though. It was a big learning experience. I went from a 1-person team to 160 person team within 2 days. That was, I just have PTSD about not sleeping and all of the craziness. And I learned a lot though. I went from decent enough skills like to be able to run like smaller stuff, but that took off. Like I crash course everything I possibly could. I had this amazing team come on, and most of my team was actually Team Supreme that came on and worked for Joe Jorgensen. A lot of the policy positions was James Weeks and I working on those. It was a lot of fun. And then July happened, and I was then Spike Cohen social media director. I won't get into details there, but it was a switch, and that's when you came in. And I was like, I don't really know this person, so I'm gonna have him do data. And you did data, and then you ended up being my number two. And I thought it was so much fun. But we got into Spike then.
That kind of jumps into kind of the next thing I wanted to talk with you a little bit about too. And that's, you know, thanks for the story. That's a lot. I have a bunch of folks that have come into the Libertarian Party through different ways. And, there's usually a little bit of, especially I feel like our generation, kind of the older millennials, if you will, Gary Johnson was a piece of it. Ron Paul might have been some piece of it as well. But it was a smaller piece than some of the folks in the generation, I think, right in front of us. So, it's funny you mentioned that there's some similarities and some differences there. But and I think a lot of folks, we were just talking a little bit actually pre-show, a lot of folks, we're seeing this kind of new generation of folks coming in from the Joe and Spike campaign, and really great to see kind of new activists and people who want to help and folks that are not burned out from working Gary Johnson's campaign and then maybe Joe Jorgensen. You know what I mean? They're kind of coming in fresh.
So. It's like we're the senior class and they're the freshmen coming in and like, oh, look at them. They're so sweet. They don't know yet.
that's great. And then now also, right after the election and everything, actually it was right before that or something, it was right around then, was Vermin Supreme as well. You come on and done the social media stuff for Vermin Supreme as well. So yeah, it's two very different things. I Spike and Vermin ran together. They're they have some similar hijinks, if you will, but they're very different voices. You know what I mean? Like
very different voices. And it's not even like an opposites kind of thing. It's just a different, like a different approach to the same things. Like it's still the same effect. I mean, obviously not when, there's some wacky stuff coming from Vermin's Twitter and like his social media, and that's very on brand for him.
Yeah.
I love it. Like I love it so much. I love being able to finally not have to kind of like be a chameleon within the party and like not really know my place. Like I've put the blood, sweat, and tears in. So now I can just do what I want. And it's great. Like I can be myself and be as radical and audacious as I want to be. And it's been a lot of fun. Like the last 2020, I know it was like a really hard year for a lot of people. And it was a hard year for me as well, but just the personal and career growth that I had, it was, oh my gosh, I can't stress enough how amazing 2020 was. But yeah, about 2 weeks before the election, Desiree Lindsay, the lovely Desiree, she contacted me and wanted me to be Vermin's social media director. I was like, oh my God. Like, I still fangirl over Vermin a little bit. And we talk all the time. Yeah. I am his voice a lot of the time. And he actually does a lot of his own social media too. So.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's not like this like man behind the curtain thing. Like it's a toss up whether it was me or him sometimes. And the greatest compliment I ever got was somebody saying like, this is a really funny Vermin tweet. And I was like, that was me. And they were like, oh, I can't even tell anymore. I was like, oh my God. Yay.
So that's, you know, that's something that I feel like a lot of people don't, and that's, that was the first thing that, so I'm a social media director for Ashley Shade's campaign right now, and we have a great team, and Ryan, I saw Ryan's on in the comments, and I know a few others pop in and out, and Sasha as well. Sasha just joined the team. So yeah, it's, you know, that the first thing I had to say was we have to learn, like, we have a big thing to learn Ashley's voice. Like, that's a huge place to start. And I don't think people really realize that, like, you have to make the messaging consistent and, you know, and look all the same. You're not trying to trick people, but you're just trying to make sure that everyone's getting Ashley's message. Yeah. And right now, you know, we're going through this whole process of approvals, you know, like we do, you know, with every other stuff, you know, Spike and Vermin stuff as well. And
you have that transition period, because it's a big thing running someone's social media for them. Like, if it's a personality, a politician, because you're speaking as them, they're going to be held accountable for anything you say. There's a huge trust aspect there. And I got really, really lucky, like, whenever I was coming over to Spike's team, because we clicked, like, right away. There was a little bit of a transition period where I was like, I don't really know if this is, like, your tone. And obviously, it was, like, super helpful all the time. But it just meshed really well. And it was just, the chemistry was there, and it just worked. So then that freed up a lot of our time to work on, like, messaging strategy. And there's a lot of stuff that goes into social media messaging that a lot of people don't think about. Like, you have to do a lot of keyword research. You have to do a lot of analytics stuff. You have to do so much. You have to have, like, a branding voice kind of thing. So, like, here's the things you do say, here's the things you don't. Like, here's certain words we never use, here's certain words we do. When referring to this thing, you always say that. Like, it's intricate, and it's a huge trust process, and you kind of have to, like, really respect that and not take that for granted ever. But, like,
when you
look into that, it works.
Right. And I didn't realize the personal aspect too. Like, it's so, like, Vermin and Spike, I feel, you know, two people that I've gotten to know, I've been very lucky to get to know both of those folks. They both have a very high level of morality, but they both have very different kind of rules about what they do and don't say and how they do and don't say things. And it's just, it's such a personal aspect, even when you're just working with great people, you can't just assume that they're going to message the same way, or they're going to have the same kind of rules about things. It's just, and I think most folks,
keeping those straight,
yeah,
very hard.
I can imagine.
One of the first things I did whenever I felt comfortable enough to speak as Vermin, and I still, like, have to go to them sometimes, like, I don't really know if this is, like, a line, and then he'll tweet something just off the wall. I'm like, okay, the line is gone now. You never quite know what's going on there. But yeah, like, the first thing I did whenever I felt comfortable enough is I would switch between the two of them. Like, I would speak as them on Twitter and, like, have them talk to each other at, like, 6 in the morning, because nobody's watching at 6 in the morning. Like, if something gets a little, like, isn't quite right, it's very low risk.
Yeah.
So I'd sit on my couch at 6 in the morning waiting for time to get my kids up for school, and I would switch between the two accounts and just, like, talk as Vermin and Spike, like, back and forth with each other.
And I had alerts on for them, so I would wake up to alerts of that whole message, like, the whole conversation back and forth. And I was like, what's going on here? And I knew it was you.
What are you doing? I was like, I'm practicing. Shush.
That's awesome.
It's so fun, though, because, like, people, like, post those screenshots. You're like, yay! Like, it's so, like, it's such a rewarding experience. And also, like, there's, like, the back end of it. Like, you see the results of what you're doing, and it's not just, like, the funny jokes and the memes or whatever. You get in there and, like, you see, like, okay, we were going to talk about immigration this week, and we have 3 immigration posts. Like, we've planned them out just right. We've got just the right keywords and the SEO and the planning. Everything goes into it, and then you see the return on it. You're like, oh my God. Like, well, with Joe stuff and with Spike stuff, we would have a plan for, like, each week we'd have a theme.
Yep.
And then afterwards, we would check Google Analytics, and that topic would be trending with, like, libertarian, and it would be trending, like, as a related query with Spike and with Joe and with the Libertarian Party. It was, like, it was so cool to see that. It's like, we're getting people to search for victimless crimes. We're getting people to search for, like, abolish ICE. and like in relation to the Libertarian Party. Obviously, I'm not taking credit for everyone Googling apologize, but like the way that Google Analytics works, it shows you all that. But it's so cool to see that, and you're like, we're actually affecting people, and you can see it, and like there's an immediate sense of return there, and like we're changing people's minds.
Right.
And the growth factor was just off the charts. And I would just like to say we did beat Bill Weld's page likes before the end of the campaign. So
I remember that moment, exactly that moment when that happened.
Yeah, so I remember that moment. I screamed, like, yes. So whenever I'm doing this, I always have like one petty like benchmark. That was my petty benchmark, is passing Bill Weld.
It's good. It drives your, you know, it drives you every day. And especially when, you know, the wee hours of the night when you're working on something, that kind of stuff really drives you.
And you're like checking it, just staring at your phone.
Refresh. Yeah. So I know, like, you know, and this is, you brought up a really good point too. Like, we, you know, being able to have that platform and be able to speak on, you know, very serious issues that are in some cases, in a lot of cases, life or death for a lot of people, or a significant impact to the, you know, some group or specific people's lives, and being able to, so I think it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, you have your platform, you're able to kind of bring up topics and highlight things that need to be known, like, you know, folks on death row that shouldn't be there. There's, you know, there's a ton of stuff that we've covered on Spike and Vermin's accounts and stuff. But I want to, you know, kind of point out and kind of get your take on this is like how, you know, being able to do that is such a good thing because you can really impact change. But having that voice also is a huge responsibility because you can, and I think this is something that gets lost on people who could, you know, potentially manage state LP accounts, or folks that are prominent, you know, have a ton of following and are prominent members of the Libertarian Party. We're still a relatively small party. And same with, you know, goes with every other third party who's listening, because we do have other third party folks who listen. Your voice as a prominent member of that party is significant enough to have a negative impact if you really bring that messaging in a negative direction. So I guess kind of what's your take on that? And then what are some tips for folks that are kind of thrust into that position of, you know, taking on maybe your state party's Twitter account or, you know, being a messenger for a political campaign? How do you stay with, you know, things that are going to be seen, and not everything's going to have its detractors and people who don't like your message? Sure. But how do you make sure that you're not being detrimental?
So the way you communicate those things, and the way you make sure that there's a balance, because we are the Libertarian Party. Like, I know we're not the centrist party. I know we're not like fiscally conservative and socially liberal. Like, that's so reductive and incorrect. But there is a kind of balance that we have to have. So whenever I talk about right-leaning topics or like right talking points, if we're talking about like Trump said this in a press conference, we're going to take that and talk about it from the left. Like, we have like, not really from the left, because it's still Libertarian Solutions. We're not like pandering. We're not changing our principles in any way whatsoever. We're still being very radically libertarian, but it's just in the language you use. So a big thing that we did that was really effective, and it was super effective on Joe's campaign when I was running Joe's social media, was I would take keywords that the left and the disaffected left, mainly not the neolibs who were obviously supporting Biden, but the disaffected left, the young voters who were really upset with the system and were really going towards anti-authoritarian. We would take the keywords they were using and like general discourse, trending stuff on Twitter, trending stuff on Google Analytics, whatever, and insert that in whatever we were talking about. So whenever they would search for that, our tweets would pop up at the top, and they would see something different. That's the big thing. Yeah. The political discourse, it is so divided and it's so like politicized, but a lot of people aren't cool with that. Like, they do feed into it. They still kind of play that game. But it's still like, it has a huge toll on your mental health. There were a few times during the campaign I had to take a day. Like, my mental health, like, it's a lot to run a high profile social media account because there's a lot of detractors and not so great people. But no, like you have to have that balance. So if we're talking about guns, we're going to talk about why the left would want guns.
Yep.
So we're going to talk about, you know, abused women. We're going to talk about minority rights. We're going to talk about trans rights because trans people should be able to defend themselves. Like, that is super important, especially if we're going to talk about violence against trans people. Let's talk about how they can defend themselves.
Yep.
And you don't have to like guns, but like, let's just have an honest conversation. And that's what it was all about. It was about if we're talking about the right issue, then we would talk about it with left like inflection. We would take their keywords. We would kind of co-opt the conversation and never ever waver on principles. But it opened up so many people's minds. They're like, I've never heard it explained this way. All I've heard from gun activists is like, come and take it out of my cold dead hands, or like, shut up, liberal.
Right.
So it opened all these people's minds, and they may not have gone to vote for Joe and Spike at the end. Like, it's kind of hard to quantify that.
Right.
There was a huge turnout for that, but they did like plant those seeds. And they're thinking about things a little bit differently now. They're going to go in and see all these other politicians talking about the same crap they've been talking about for decades. And they're like, I remember that one person who was talking about things a little differently. I'm going to go check out what they're saying about it. And you get that retention. You have that user retention. You have that loyalty building. And converting someone. I hate saying the word converting.
Sounds like evangelical. And yeah.
We're not cult, I promise. We're not all weird. But like just getting someone to open their mind to the ideas of libertarianism and the ideas of liberty and anarchy. And it's a long process. I mean, it took me a couple of years to get to where I am. And I only got to where I am now last year.
Right.
The long process. And I was in the party for 4 or 5 years. So.
Yeah. And I don't want to gloss over this. You made a really, really important point that I think more people need to understand and realize. And I didn't get it until I worked directly with you. So people always say, well, we're going to have to bring people in from the left and the right because those are the voters. Like, there are existing voters, and there are also independents that do vote left and right. But for the most part, they're in the red or blue team, and we need to start recruiting folks from those camps. We don't do so by repeating their talking points to their side of the, like, we don't do that by repeating their talking, the right's talking points on guns. Mm-hmm. We don't do that by talking to the left's talking points on social safety nets or mutual aid, let's say, like, you know, the ability to help folks who need it. Mm-hmm. You're not going to convert people that way because the Democrats are already talking about that and the Republicans are already talking about
the noise. Yeah,
exactly. To be able to rise, you know, kind of the cream rising to the top and having that conversation stand out as, hey, this is a different perspective I've never heard, but it's using the things that I'm comfortable with or that I care about. That's how you impact people. That's how you grab people and actually change, you know, you maybe not immediately change their mind or, you know, convert them or anything like that, but you're getting them to at least start thinking, hey, you know, these libertarians, you know, it sounds very radical what they want to do or what they, some of the big changes they'd eventually like to see. But at the end of the day, you know, this makes sense. And I never heard it explained this way. And I think we talked about it very briefly because it seems very second nature to you. That's how you've done so well, I think, in a lot of this space. One of the, you know, many tools you have in your tool belt. But I don't want to gloss over it because I think it's huge. And I think people just completely miss out on this. So
just echoing the right when we're talking to the right, like, because Trump's already saying those things and the Republican candidate, they're already saying these things. They're not going to look at you any differently. And that's actually why we have the stereotype of Republicans that like weed and Democrats that like guns.
Yep.
Because that's all that those sides see of us. They're like, well, you say everything else that you're, you know, the other party's saying, but you like guns or you like weed, because we don't stand out. We don't talk about gun issues from a left perspective. And we don't talk about equality issues from a right perspective. We don't talk about the drug war from a right perspective. Like, I didn't know how much the drug war even cost until I had to research it myself, because I never heard any politician talk about it.
Right.
We have to talk about those things. Like, if you talk about the drug war and the actual impact it has, and if you really want to get those right wingers, tell them how dangerous it is for police officers to be enforcing the drug war. And they start to be like, oh, well, if I'm going to back the thin blue line, I need to actually back the thin blue line. So you start to have those conversations, and some people you're not going to get through to.
Right.
A lot of the people you're talking directly to, you're not going to get through to, but there are 50 people watching that conversation. So.
Exactly. And I think one of the big things is too, like, you don't have to agree with that person. Like, you're making a point to them on why the Libertarian Party might appeal to them, but not, I'm going to agree with you on everything, and I do agree with you on everything. No two people even, like, you know, I have a lot of friends, you and I don't agree on every single policy. We have debates about
it.
So it's good. Like, those things grow, you know, they sharpen your skills when talking or hopefully friendly debating with people online, you know, educate or.
That's how I felt, like, my philosophical backing before I, like, really got into the messaging stuff is because I debated with my friends for 3 years on the internet, like a bunch of nerds.
Yep.
That's what we did. We were best friends, but we would get in very, very heated debates about things like natural rights and totally normal things for people to talk about. Yeah. But that's how you do it. You have this conversation. You push those boundaries, and you push that your line of thinking with friendly people, because you can compartmentalize the things. It doesn't have to be some zero sum game.
Right. You're
not like, oh, you don't believe what I believe in this respect, so like everything else is bad. And now there are some qualifiers there. If you believe something really, really horrid, I'm not going to waste too much time trying to convert you, because chances are it's not going to happen.
Yep.
But general stuff. Take your time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's probably 60 to 80% of the population that really falls in the middle, even if they don't consider themselves. Once you start peeling back layers and talking to them, they fall somewhere between the two major parties, and maybe, you know, north or south of where they actually end up. Mm-hmm. If you look at the kind of bigger political compass.
Another thing, there's a myth about this, like, millions and millions of libertarians out there that just don't know that they're libertarians. They're not there. We have to get people by issues.
Right.
So, actually, you could have that one up.
No, that's perfect. And I think one of the things you brought up there that's so spot on too is, like, it's not a zero sum game, you know, working with folks who align on, you know, 30, 40, 50% of issues are important to not only reach out to and maybe try and convert. And some folks you're never going to fully bring into, you know, them voting for a libertarian every single time. Mm-hmm. But forming coalitions with folks and being able to say, okay, like, the Greens have gotten me to say, if there's a Democrat, Republican, and a Green that I'm voting for, I'm most likely going to vote for that Green.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very rarely going to vote for the duopoly, because I've seen the differences. And yes, the Greens and us, we don't agree on everything. 100%, sure. But we agree on enough that for the most part, especially things like criminal justice, like if there's a Green running for sheriff, libertarians vote for that Green. They agree with you on criminal justice reform. Like, that shouldn't
be such a ballot access. It helps us.
Right. And so one of the things I wanted to talk about, you know, I know you've done some reaching out. I know you talked with some prominent Green Party members. I know you've talked with DSA and other folks. Just give me, you know, kind of your take on forming coalitions, cooperating with folks, and how can we bring this even further? Like, what would be your kind of ideal plan on forming massive coalitions for state or, you know, larger elections?
So, where do I even begin? So my first, I wouldn't say my first, like, coalition thing, but I was at an event in Ohio, and Howie Hawkins was a couple miles away. And I decided to go over there. It was kind of a group decision there, but I ended up being the one to go over there. And I found Howie Hawkins in the middle of a 1500 person Black Lives Matter rally, dragged both of my small children through this rally to find Howie Hawkins. And I did it. And I just walked up and was like, hi. Oh my God, it's Howie Hawkins. Holy crap. I was like, I'm the social media director for Spike Cohen. And he was like, oh yes, I know Spike Cohen. I was like, oh, cool. That's awesome. Yeah, me too. But yeah, it was really awkward. Like, I don't do people well. But yeah, so I went up to him and I was like, I'd like to, like, have discussions between our two parties and get some kind of, like, sit down forum between our candidates. And we ended up not being able to make the forum work, but they were open to it. Because they, like, even Howie Hawkins and Angela Walker, like, they acknowledge, like, I wouldn't say half the platform, like, a lot of our platform overlaps, and especially with local issues. And one thing the Green Party is really big on that libertarians don't know about, or I don't care about, but they should care about, is their one of their big things is decentralization and localization of politics. Like, they don't want this massive state control. I mean, there's some exceptions to that. They do want, you know, like some of the welfare programs to be expanded. They want, you know, Green New Deal and energy programs to be expanded. But most of their politics, like their politics that affect people the most, all of that they want localized. They don't want this sweeping, like, one size fits all, because they realize one size fits all is what's got us here. And that's a big thing that we should work with them on. Decriminalization. We are 100% in agreement on decriminalization. Sex work, that's one that we don't agree on completely. Well, really at all. But ending the drug war, ending the school to prison pipelines, ending all of this, like, massive over incarceration that we have in the US. Like, that's a huge issue. It affects millions and millions and millions of people. Over 135 million people in the US have an immediate family member that have been in the prison system. Like, we have to do something about that. And I get that, like, the Green Party isn't like this giant powerhouse, but it's maybe a quarter of, or even half of, what the LP is. Like, that's a huge boost in numbers. We can work on those ballot referendums, and we obviously we have to run our candidates. We have to run our candidates for ballot access. We have to run it for education purposes. We have to keep our name out there. That's what we do. We're a political party. Yep. But a lot of the downtime should be focused on these ballot referendums and coalition building and doing events together. Like, let's go do a park cleanup and invite the DSA. Yep. Like, I know that's, like, bad words in some LP circles, but invite the DSA. If you're going to have a gun rally, invite the Socialist Rifle Association, invite Pink Pistol, invite any kind of gun group that you can. That's obviously, like, appropriate. Like, invite as many people as you can on those issues, like those one issues. If it's an environmental event, you got, invite the Green Party, guns, anything you could do. If you want to work on, like, petitioning to get someone out of prison because they're on the, they're on death row, work with literally anybody but the Republicans, and you'll have help. We don't have to, like, rely on this libertarian ideology, like, well, I am a superior libertarian because I like Ron Paul, and Ron Paul is the best. Like, shut up. Nobody cares.
Right.
You have to get, I think libertarians have to get over themselves a little bit.
Yeah.
Swallow their pride, learn to compartmentalize, and have some nuance once in a while, and work with people on single issues. And I've seen a lot of that happening over the last 6 months or so, a lot more than I have in the last 5 years. And I think, you know, Spike doing BLM rallies had a lot to do with that.
Yep.
That's super, super cool. I'm really proud to be a part of that.
Yeah, no, I think that's perfect. I think I completely agree. And I think there's so much there to be had at, especially the local level. I mean, national level gets a little difficult to do, kind of big, you know. You could do some smaller things, like, or you can do a, you know, some of the debate, or even just a forum where you can kind of have different ideas.
I really want to push the National Party to do a roundtable forum with a bunch of third parties, talk about third party struggles, talk about where we agree on things, and then talk about how to peacefully discuss, like, very peacefully, very civilly discuss the things that we don't agree on, like how to be constructive in those conversations, because that's where we, like, really have a disconnect. It just gets nasty, and then you get mad and you're like, fine, well, I'm not going to work with you on anything now. And that's, it's so destructive to what we're trying to do, because why are we involved in this? Like, we want to help people. We don't want to wait around for, like, you know, all of our candidates to start getting elected at duopoly levels.
Right.
It's going to be waiting a long time. If that's why you're in politics, like, I'm sorry, you're probably not in politics for the right reason, because you should be here because you want to help people. You want to help change lives. You want to help affect policy that's going to have the most harm reduction. Harm reduction is what we should focus on the most.
Yeah. And I think one of the big points that you had, like, why, how amazing would it be if the third parties were the adults in the room? Like, you can't even come close. Like, you look at any sort of forum, and even, like, if you look as small as your town Facebook page, if you have Republicans and Democrats in that page, I guarantee they're fighting every day, just whether or not they put a Biden or a Trump thing on the page. And some folks will completely, you know, disregard national politics and all sorts of stuff. But at the end of the day, they have a really hard time coalition building or talking with each other on many different issues across, you know, and things that they do agree on, which is it's insane that there's so much kind of division there. But how amazing would it be if third parties could be the example of this is how you have these conversations when you disagree. And these are how you build organization activism in coalitions when you do agree. And being able to do that, and like I said, just be the adults in the room, would be such a huge kind of heel turn for third parties, and being a great example. And I think it would be a huge recruitment tool. I just see if you had something like that on any sort of national network, people would flock. I think people would just be amazed that real people are sitting down and having tough conversations about things they don't agree with, and they're leaving with a mutual respect of each other and continue to try and help people just in different ways.
Yeah. I actually had a really good conversation with the DSA in Tennessee. It was a very, very last minute impromptu Zoom call at about 2 o'clock in the morning. Did not expect that to happen. Someone was just like, hey, I have DSA contacts. You want to be honest? Yes.
Yeah.
So we ended up talking for about 4 or 5 hours or so, and we talked about healthcare. Mm-hmm. Like, I brought that up. I was like, okay, we're having good conversations about criminal justice. I was like, let's just try it here. Mm-hmm. We ended up kind of coming to a understanding, like, I don't like Medicare for All. I don't want Medicare for All. I think that is not a good way to go. I also realized that, like, our system is so ridiculously corrupt, and there's so much red tape, and there's so many layers of crap that make everything so complicated. It's impossible to fix unless you burn it down. That's kind of how you feel. Obviously, there's probably some path to do so, but it's looking at it as a whole, like, where do you even begin?
Right.
We both acknowledge, like, our current system is garbage. Our end goal is for people to be taken care of and be able to afford and get healthcare that will save their lives. We want people to be healthy and happy and, like, flourish. And they ended up agreeing, like, we can work congruently on our separate goals. Like, you guys want dereg and we want Medicare for All, but, like, they ended up agreeing, like, we can work with you on dereg, like, deregulating the industry and getting it back to, like, the, you know, price competitive competition and things like that. But they all agreed to work with us on that kind of stuff, because that still helps. Fighting certificate of need laws, that is such a huge thing. Yeah. That, like, drives up cost, and it makes less available like, providers. It makes people have to travel farther. It bumps up the like, the referral processes.
Right. Because
you wait 3 months to get into a new doctor because there aren't enough of them.
Yep.
And then while that's happening, you're getting sicker and sicker, and then your outcomes are just decreased and decreased. It's a terrible system. So they agreed to actually work with us on deregulation, and I agreed. I told them, I was like, I do not speak for the LP here. I will work with you on some Medicare issues.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you just go against everything that I stand for, but, like, we can have some kind of understanding here.
Right.
So,
I mean, even a big win would be just, you know, allowing for competition. That, like, Medicare companies can't even negotiate pricing with pharmaceutical companies. I mean, not to dive too deep into this one issue, but, like, I had Spike on, you know, I had Spike's time for 45 minutes to an hour. And I said, I want to talk healthcare with you because I think you can lay it out where we can work on all of these things. And then we just disagree on who pays for it with most of the other third parties. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about all these other things we can do. And that's what we spent most of the time doing. There's so many places that people just completely turn off and say, I'm not going to work with them because they believe in something, you know, completely antithetical to what I believe. But if you look at
they don't really believe anything antithetical. They have what they've been told by mm-hmm. politicians and their friend groups and the culture that they live in. Like, that's what they believe the solution is. I'm not going to knock that.
Right.
They want a solution. We want a solution. Like, I feel like if you go into these conversations and you admit, like, okay, we have differences here. Let's put that on the table now. Here are our differences. But what are your end goals? And here's my end goals. And see where they overlap. And you knock past so much of that visceral reaction. You just have to not be a reactionary turd. And you can work with people on almost anything.
And I think keeping, you know, things in perspective – Are we going to agree on what the end utopia looks like? Probably, like there's so many, so much philosophy and you know, economic books and things that people aren't willing to spend, you know, several months of their lives reading. There are so many things when you bring, and I know you probably laugh because you do, and I've got my library beside me. But at the end of the day,
we're talking to normal people. They're like, "What's wrong with you?"
Exactly. So you got to break it down to like those small things, yeah. And then you find out, holy shit, we agree on most of these small things that we want to change. And it's just, you have to get past that whole, like you said, libertarians need to get over themselves, and then they can start working with a ton of different people on.
What good is being the smartest person in the room if nobody wants to be in the room with you?
Yes. So. Perfect. Absolutely perfect there. So I want to wrap things up with a quick note of congratulations on Sasha's campaign, because I know I just wanted to hit on that live. I did talk to you in the pre-show because that was awesome, and Sasha won. I just had Sasha on last week. We swapped the episodes so that Sasha could talk right before the election, and we could talk to you after. So I want to talk to you real quick about that, and then anything else you want to talk about at the end, you know, feel free.
So while we're on the topic of coalitions, Sasha Cohen, Libertarian for DeKalb City Clerk in Illinois, just won his election with 82.27%, which is fantastic. That's he awesome. Had very well funded. It was a write-in candidate, so like obviously, like I figured he was going to win. I did not think he was going to win by 82%. She was very well funded. She had the support of a lot of city officials. She had the support of a lot of wealthy people, and she had PAC support too. So we were like, oh, okay. I came in as campaign manager about a month before election day, so I missed a lot of things. I came in after she had announced. I was like, okay, what do we need to do? I don't really know what I'm doing as campaign manager, but I'm going to learn everything I possibly can. So I reached out to a Republican friend of mine who had run for a local office before. I was like, what can you teach me? He's like, I will get you my campaign manager's number. So I had a thing with my friend's campaign manager who was in the Republican Party. He's like, here's our trading guides for campaign managers. I was like, I was working with progressive, like I was a progressive slate for the school board candidates in DeKalb. And there was a lot of coalition building there. Like Sasha was very honest, like, here's a lot of things that we don't agree on, but I want to see communities start like helping each other. And I want to have that community spirit back. I want to have transparency. I want to have, you know, ranked choice voting. That's a huge thing that we agree with progressives on. Like, we got to start using that one. Because they really, really want ranked choice voting. You should have seen progressives' faces, like people who have the Black Lives Matter, science is real flags in their yard. You mentioned ranked choice voting when you're knocking on their door and they want to hug you.
Yeah.
But they won't because COVID.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of things that we can work with them on. And that's what Sasha did a lot of the work for the coalition stuff way before I even came on. So like he gets all that credit there. And that was such a good learning experience for me too. Cause I got in there, I was like, oh, hello. I'm just a libertarian anarchist and here with all these DSA people. And it turned out like really fun. Like I am Facebook friends with them all now. Like they're wonderful people and they have the same concerns as us. We want transparency in local government, and that's the kind of things we can do. We can build those coalitions. We can start doing slates with candidates that aren't in our party, especially in those nonpartisan races. Because it's nonpartisan. It doesn't matter.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I even heard, you know, just even the ability, we heard last week from Sasha, just being able to hand out literature together and say, I will hand out your literature if you hand out mine. And just doing that at a small level, at a local level, that is so important. Because you,
50,000 people in that town, it was huge.
Yeah.
Because it was just, a lot of the times it was just me and Sasha knocking doors. I drove out there every weekend that I was his campaign manager. It was a lot of driving. I live in Ohio. But I made it, and we knocked ours, and we handed out lit every day. And we had some really good volunteers come out, too. But having those extra people to do lit drops, they give us a pile, we give them a pile, and we double our ground blocked.
Right.
Amazing. And we got to share data, too, yep. Which if you're a libertarian, you need to know that data is everything. And you need to sign up for L2 and buy every piece of data you possibly can.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, there's a ton of stuff that we didn't get to today that we're definitely going to have another episode in season two. I just talked about, I think you saw, I talked about in the beginning of the show, I'm ending season one kind of mid-May, and then I'm going to come back for season two after the summer. So I'll definitely have you back on and talk about that stuff. But I want to give you kind of a little bit here at the end just to talk about anything you want to talk about is, you know, a thank you to coming on the show and talking with me. So.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you for having me on. I guess if you want to check out stuff, I am AnarchoMom373 on Twitter. I was just AnarchoMom, but my Twitter account got banned. So I'm AnarchoMom373. I have a digital marketing newsletter that is completely free. You can sign up on things. I haven't sent one out in a few weeks, but I've also been running an election. So apologies if you are on my email list. It's fine. You're going to get one tomorrow, though. So that I have an email newsletter that goes out. I have some courses that are going to be coming out very soon. I'm going to be adapting those into a new project that's coming up within the next 3 months. There's going to be a major, major announcement in the next 3 months. Caitlin Cloven on Facebook. You can find me there. I'm on Instagram, but that's just my personal, so like, don't click on me there. Just follow Spike Cohen on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok. And Reddit, yes, we're on Reddit. And then Vermin Supreme on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, Instagram, Reddit, and TikTok. I think I got all them.
There we go.
Just search for Vermin Supreme, you'll find it. And then VSI as well, which you have the VSI ad, so I won't go through all those. But,
And we're on the VSA website now. We're if you go to verminsupremeinstitute.com/podcast.
Such a cool thing there. I love working on VSA. It's such a fulfilling experience. And then Stacey Pressman as well. I am the communications director for Stacey Pressman during New York City Mayor. Super, super cool. She has verified accounts on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, I believe. So go check out Stacey Pressman for New York City Mayor. There's going to be some really, really exciting stuff coming down the line there. We're getting stuff going out the door this week. Actually, I've got some stuff lined up. I really just kind of like officially started a few days ago because of Sasha's campaign and all of that. But yeah, it's really, really exciting. It's one of the biggest jobs I've ever had.
Yeah. And if you are interested in Stacey's information or anything, if you go back two episodes, if you're listening on Spotify or anything, you'll see Stacey came on the show a couple weeks ago. So yeah, it's, you know, very, similarly, I guess, connected there. You know, Sasha, you and Stacey all right. Yeah. You know,
it was kind of funny how that worked out. You got to have Richard Spike on next week and it'll be
cool. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, no, this was great. Like I said, I'm excited. I'm excited for the big announcement coming up. And if, you know, hopefully we can have you on, you know, right around that time to talk about it some more and promote it. So,
okay. I would love to come back anytime. It's always a pleasure hanging out with one of my best friends. So
it's fun. Like I said, I tell this to a lot of the folks that I'm friends with that I have on. It's like we're having the conversation that we'd probably have anyways, but people get to watch and kind of chime in.
Yeah, I just have to like ignore the camera that's right in front of the screen. It's not a big deal. Well, you're used to my rambling, so it's.
Oh, it was great. And I appreciate it a ton. And I will, I'll talk to you soon. I hope you have a wonderful night. Thank you again for coming on.
Yeah. All right. I'll talk to you later.
Caitlin Cloven, everyone. That was awesome. A ton of fun. And I thank her so much for coming on and kind of educating us on a bunch of different topics and being able to, you know, show different ways of not only messaging, but coalition building and actually just being able to reach out and work with people, especially on a local level. I feel like, you know, that's one of the big goals of the show is to form coalitions and reach out to different groups. I hope folks got to learn a lot. Again, if you want to learn more, I put Caitlin's Twitter handle in the comments, so you can go there and then subscribe to her newsletter. I'm subscribed to that newsletter, and I learn something every time I read, even though I worked with her for, you know, the whole second half of Spike's campaign. So yeah, it's really wonderful. She does a ton of work to try and help educate folks, not only in, you know, Libertarian Party stuff, but you know, other third parties as well. So feel free to reach out to myself or her if you want to get in touch. You know, definitely check out her, like I said, her newsletter on Twitter. And lastly, I just want to end up with I am looking for some folks to help. So if you are interested in, so I did get someone to help out with some of the scheduling stuff, but I'm interested in getting some folks to help out with social media and potentially doing some maybe building of a few databases to try and help with coalition building and activists kind of mentoring or in kind of helping bridge gaps between folks for different rallies or cleanups or mutual aid events in local areas. So if that interests you and you'd like to help, please send me a message. And I'd love to have, you know, a couple folks join and help out. You know, if the show kind of speaks to you and everything, that would be a great way to help, or, you know, go in and take a look at the couple mutual aid programs we have in the shop to help those programs out. But I hope you enjoyed the conversation I had with Caitlin and every other episode of Post Political Podcast. Have a good night, everyone.